What is ROI? You know, from an executive's perspective, and here's the best advice I can give the listeners is from an executive standpoint, my ROI is my time. I have a very finite amount of time. I've got a lot of stuff to do, and I've got a lot of things that need to be done in the day. So my ROI is time. From a vendor's perspective, ROI is terms, they measure it in dollars and cents. The metrics is exactly the same, and here's how. From an executive standpoint, he measures his time, and that's his value. That's how he measures ROI. But he'll spend the money to save his time because he's got other things he's got to do. That's the connection between the two. And that's where they're actually the same metric, even though they're measured differently.
This is Bare Knuckles and Brass Tacks, the cybersecurity podcast that tackles the human side of the industry. We're talking vendors, we're talking buyers, and everything in between. I'm George K. from the vendor side.
And I'm George A., a Chief Information Security Officer.
And today, our guest is Charles Payne, CISO at Neptune Media, and one of the organizers behind the Horizon Summit, a series of cybersecurity conferences. And he brings a lot to the table. He brings a lot of practitioner experience and this dual hat that he wears as an organizer. So where he's dealing with vendors and trying to get the ROI out of events. And I just thought that was a really interesting paradox to explore.
Yeah, Charles is really interesting. We really dug into his practitioner experience, particularly as an independent contractor, really looking at small market experience as well. And I think really just speaking to the differences between being an independent contractor in the small business world and then being at the big four. Not only is he talking about the Horizon Summit, but he really talks about how to look about cyber as a small business practitioner, which I think is a unique perspective for our show.
Yeah. And to our listeners, just a note, we had to keep this one rather short because George A. is recording from a train with some suspect Wi-Fi, but I really think that we got a lot out and there's a lot to learn both from what to expect out of practitioners and what vendors can expect, especially around ROI of events. So without further ado, we will turn it over to Charles Payne. Charles Payne, welcome to Bare Knuckles and Brass Tacks.
Thanks, George, for having me. I appreciate it.
So you are on the practitioner side, but also kind of the vendor side. So I will start us off. You occupy a very interesting place, both as a practitioner who is sold to and as a conference organizer who seeks out vendor sponsorships. So in my mind, this means you have two divergent experiences. You yourself have probably gone to shows and been relentlessly pitched or chased afterward. But as an organizer, you are also trying to convince cybersecurity vendors of the value of the Horizon Summit's audience. Can you talk a little bit about what that dual experience has been like, what it's like living in that paradox?
Absolutely, George. So it's a very unique experience. So as a practitioner, we do actually seek out other vendors and other solutions for what we're using in our stacks. But at the same token, we try to also find other sponsors that want to support us for what we're doing in our own shows and our own events. So it becomes a very, you know, as you mentioned, a paradoxical event where you try to find people who are a good fit for what you're doing as a conference organizer, but also as a practitioner. So it's a very unique experience. I don't know if I can describe it any differently than that.
All right. So Charles, I really was impressed taking a look at your profile earlier. I gotta say, man, you know, you are really, really experienced. The diversity of what you've done is kind of really cool, and you have a bit of a different experiential background than a lot of our guests. You know, you did a lot of independent contracting when you were kind of coming up, and that's really been kind of the core of your practitioner experience, as I've seen it. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Definitely accurate.
I'm wondering the difference between working in a large enterprise like Deloitte or KPMG. Do you find that independent contracting is a lot more satisfying than working in the big shop? Or do you find that life as a full-time employee or someone working in the system of the big four, do you find that is the more satisfying experience? What was your experience and why did you find it that way?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. So for me, I love the big four life. It was day one when I was with Deloitte, I was out the door. So you started traveling and you started doing what you were doing, hitting the road day one. As soon as you signed up and you got approved and you were coming in, your onboarding part of the process was you got your corporate Amex card and you're out the door officially on day one of your consulting life. So it was definitely different. I loved it. So it was, for me, it was different. It was, something that I was already used to. I grew up as a consultant, but outside of the Big Four, and then I switched and moved into the Big Four. So for me, it was kind of like business as usual. So I was accustomed to it already, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I gotta love that Big Four expense card, man. I mean, of all the things, they take your life while they have you, but shit, man, it's real nice to expense everything on that card.
Yeah. Agreed. I don't think our cards had limits. We could do whatever we wanted to do within reason.
Oh man, on to you, George.
Charles, turning our attention back to the Horizon Summit, I wanted to give you space to just talk a little bit about, what are your goals for that particular show and how did you envision it, as a differentiator compared to, some other shows? I mean, certainly locations have been very interesting, especially the one in Hawaii, but curious if you can give us the skinny on what you wanted to get out of that show.
Absolutely. So our shows focus predominantly on meeting with the decision makers and linking the decision makers directly with the security leaders in the vendor's organization. So typically you'd have XYZ vendor or partner, their executives meeting with the senior executives at some of the Fortune 100 companies or Fortune 500, depending on which show you're at. So we focus on building relationships so that our relationships that we build with the executives on both sides of the table or both sides of the aisle are transient. So as that CISO or that CIO progresses through their journey, those relationships transfer to whatever organization that they move to, so they can just, do that whole duplication cycle of their current stack where they were at previously. So we focus on building long-term value with the executives and with the vendors and our partners. And that's where we differentiate ourselves from everybody else.
Yeah, that's really interesting. We've talked previously on this show about that value of trust that, for example, George has bought from the same vendors multiple times. And I guess I've never really heard of a show whose express and explicit purpose is to cultivate that relationship rather than what is the transaction that can be had after this particular show. George A., I was curious to get your CISO hat take on that, like this idea of building at the executive level.
Well, I think it's really valid. And Charles, I think you really kind of, you found like a niche, and it's really, it's important that it's actually built upon, because the nature of the relationships, the human relationships, that's what makes these sales happen, right? I mean, look, oftentimes I'll buy technology because obviously there's a need for technology, but I'll buy from a particular salesperson because I want to do business with that salesperson. And when they go from one shop to another, as is typical, on the practitioner side too, we go switch shops every 2-3 years. And a lot of salespeople do the same thing as well. And if you have a good relationship with someone and you trust them, when they go to a completely different shop, whether it's in the same market demographic or a completely new technology class altogether, you're going to want to find a reason to do business with them. You're going to want to find a reason to get together with them. And that's why I honestly, half my vendor relationships, we do business and it's good. But, for now, for some of these guys, it's been 3-4+ years. They're my actual friends. And I welcome any opportunity to actually sit down with them, break bread and catch up and do the things. Honestly, when people get into a business, it's not about talking numbers. I mean, yes, it's presentations. Yes, it's PowerPoint decks. But at the end of the day, it's like, hey, man, what are you doing with your family this weekend? What's going on your trip? Did you have a good time? It's the normal stuff. That's what makes business happen. So if you can provide like kind of a place, a safe space for that to happen, I think you have created something that is very good. And both practitioners and salespeople will thank you for it. Now, Charles, you have a lot of small business advisory board experience. That was one thing I noticed about you, and I found that really interesting. What you, I want to ask, what do you find is the hardest part for grassroots industry organizations to scale up? Based on your experience, what are the biggest challenges organizations need to kind of overcome those early days of scaling and staging and all that, like just getting it together? Because you have so many different experiences with so many different shops. I'm sure you've seen it all.
I have. So from a organizer standpoint, you know, we have that same problem of trust. Everybody doesn't want to spend money towards something that's new. So they kind of look at it like, well, we'll try it next time. So they push it off until, you know, they can see those results. And that's okay. I understand. People get a little bit skeptical, especially in cyber. I understand our industry. But, you know, from a small business perspective, you know, I do advise a lot of small businesses, only because I'm also an angel investor, so I invest in a lot of businesses. So, you know, from their perspective, they're always looking for that initial design partner to work with, so they could also have credibility and have that, you know, continuity with the marketplace. And that's, you know, again, how we combine some of our other conferences together. We combined our investment conferences and our, you know, CISO and CIO, like cyber AI and cybersecurity executive summits together. Only because we want to build design partners and we want to build relationships. So you'll see at the next event that we're doing in November, or sorry, September, my mistake again, May is our next one. In New York City, you'll see our investor conference is actually combined with our AI and cybersecurity summit. And that's in our One World Trade Center office in New York City. Only because we want to make sure that the startups that are there pitching for funding have the opportunity to meet real people who are willing to work with them and use their information and their technologies and their stacks. We really want to cultivate those relationships.
Yeah, I dig that. Okay, so before we close out this first part, I'm going to return to this double life that you lead as both practitioner and conference organizer. This is typically the part of the show where we have the sort of airing of grievances. So what is your least favorite practice as it relates as a practitioner when you go to shows or when you go to events? What is the thing that ruffles your feathers the most as a practitioner?
Let's see, the last event that I went to, I got stuck into, I don't know, 5 or 6 boardroom sessions back to back. And that was crazy. It's basically a vendor comes in, pitches to you for 15 minutes. You don't know who they are, what to expect until they walk in the door, and then they actually give you the pitch. And then it becomes very, very different and very, you know, clear quickly that, you know, you're in the wrong place. Like, you should have never walked into this event. That's my biggest experience and my worst experience as being a practitioner. You sign up for some of these things, so you think it's a great idea, and then you get there and you're like, oh, this was a mistake.
Yeah, but if you realize that in the first 15 minutes and you're going to be there for 2 hours, that can be a bit painful, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you're there for a couple of days because you're doing a couple multi-day events and you're in a different city, different state, different location. You're like, oh, man, this was a mistake.
Okay, so now putting on that other hat, what is your main gripe as an organizer? And let me give you an example. For if you are explaining the value of Horizons to vendors and maybe they send the wrong stakeholders, like you're not sending executive level practitioners, they're sending basically like sales engineers. What? Just curious, as on the organizing side, if you've run into anything that has repeatedly annoyed you.
There are many things that do get annoying. Like for our events, you wouldn't want to stand you would not want to send a standard SDR, because an SDR is not going to understand how to actually build a relationship with a CIO or a CISO from, you know, Fortune 500 company. They're not going to, and I'm not saying there's anything bad with the BDR and SDR. They're brand new in the business in the industry, and that they're just trying to gain the experience. But you really don't want to send them to go meet the who's who of the companies. You want to send somebody else who's a senior level executive or senior level, even a senior level account executive. You wouldn't want to send your newest and most greenest employees to those events. You're not going to get any ROI out of it from a vendor standpoint, because they're not going to know how to build the relationships to begin with.
Yeah, there you said it. You said ROI, right? So
people think of ROI as the return on investment, but I think you're making the argument that that return is commensurate with the level of investment. So you send the junior folks and you expect the big ticket SOW, that's probably not going to pan out. That bet is not going to pay off.
It's not, but you know, I've found myself talking about, you know, what is ROI, you know, from an executive's perspective, and here's the best advice I can give the listeners is from an executive standpoint, my ROI is my time. I have a very finite amount of time. I've got a lot of stuff to do and I've got a lot of things that need to be done in the day. So my ROI is time. From a vendor's perspective, ROI is terms, they measure it in dollars and cents. The metric is exactly the same, and here's how. From an executive standpoint, he measures his time, and that's his value. That's how he measures ROI. But he'll spend the money to save his time because he's got other things he's got to do. That's the connection between the two. And that's where they're actually the same metric, even though they're measured differently.
I really dig that. We have not heard that before. Thank you. All right, well, we'll take a quick break and then we will be right back. Hey, listeners, Bare Knuckles and Brass Tacks is coming to RSA. We're partnering with the Mind Over Cyber Networking Breakfast and Mindfulness Workshop on Tuesday, May 7th. We'll be on site to record mini interviews with those keen to share their stories of resilience in the face of stress or burnout. Sometimes the first step for someone confronting a challenge to their mental well-being is understanding they're not alone. So, sit down with us for 10 minutes or so, tell your story, let's share it with the world, and inspire others. Be sure to follow our LinkedIn page for updates. Sign up is coming soon.
All right. So, Charles, tell me, how does a practitioner sell what they do, right? Because you've got so many years successful experience consulting. You clearly understand how to sell your services and how to sell yourself to a number of clients. I'm sure you had over the years. What do you do when your contract's about to expire as well? I mean, surely pipeline must be an issue for you, just like anywhere else where the sales is a question. But, you know, if they know or you know that a contract won't be renewing, at what point do you begin looking at your pipeline and how do you sell that service out while you're still delivering on your current contracts?
When you're with the Big Four, they actually tell you up front what you're going to do. And what happens is if you don't actually, you know, convert, you get to sit on the virtual bench type of thing. So what happens is you start actually networking with your peers and networking with the other people in the industry, trying to find out, you know, what would somebody else need help on that could actually utilize your skills. So in terms of pipeline, you know, professionally at the Big Four or otherwise, if you have a contract that's coming up, it's kind of like you're always researching, you're always investigating for what's next. It's kind of the same thing as a CISO, because, you know, when you get your next gig, for example, you know, after a few months, you should start looking again, trying to put out feelers and try to figure out what you're going to do. As you know, George, a CISO, we're there typically because we're type A and we're there to do a specific job, a specific task for a specific duration, a period of time. Once we build out whatever organizational stack that we're trying to do, or once we already form and we secure that team, we're there to get that done. Once we accomplish that task, it's time to move on and go to the next problem, the next issue, the next challenge. So it's like once you already know that you're doing that, even professionally as a CISO, as a practitioner, you've got to start looking for your next role. That's where you just start actively, you know, hitting the market, trying to look and see what else is out there.
What is your advice for the vendors when it comes to event sponsorship? You talked a little bit about ROI in the first part and kind of conceptualizing that. But in terms of like very practical recommendations, what should they do and what should they avoid? Or as I put in my notes, what should they stop doing? So I'm talking about like at the event, like how are they conducting themselves at the event?
You know, I think that at an event, we normally preach don't be salesy, don't try to sell your product, don't make a sales pitch when you're speaking. Talk about industry standards, talk about industry problems, talk about how you fix problems or how you meet a need. But don't try to pitch your product and don't try to sell your product and drive that home, because all it's going to do is turn the executives off. The executives want to be there to fix and to mitigate problems and find solutions. They don't want to be sold to. We don't want to be sold to adversely. So If you tell us how you fix problems, we're a lot more likely to listen and pay attention than you are, than we are if we're, if you're just trying to tell us about your product and pitch us a solution or pitch us a product. That's the best advice I can give.
When you say fix problems, I think what I'm reading is that you're talking about like the business outcomes, not so much like the bells and whistles and the feature spec of a particular solution. Is that right?
Correct. So if you were like, I don't know, like an identity access management vendor, I mean, you wouldn't want to pitch me all your features and specifications. Mm-hmm. You'd want to tell me like, as an industry standard, why does IAM matter? Why does identity and access management matter to a company of my size, or that's relevant to a company that's scaling to grow to a future size? So talk to me about some of the industry challenges. Talk to me about some of the problems. Tell me why, or give me some examples in the past of like, you know, look at XYZ company when they had a breach that, you know, led to 30-party risk. I mean, I'm actually quoting FedEx here. And then like, show me why that actually matters, you know, moving forward, and why I should pay attention. But don't tell me about your product and what you do specifically. Tell me about industry problems, what other companies have experienced, and how what are some of the ways that you can mitigate some of those things going forward. So if you talk to me about industry problems, industry challenges, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think that's something that's surprising on the vendor side, is that practitioners frequently say they want to know about new problems. They want to catch up on new standards. I think that's a surprise on the vendor side, because we just assume that CISOs are all up to date, like on the latest. And I'm sure they all do their part, but they are also crazy busy. And I think it's an admission that like they can't keep pace with everything. Otherwise, they would never sleep. They would just, you know, ingest a news feed at all times. And so I think being vulnerable enough to say to the vendors, since you're on quote unquote the cutting edge, or you claim to be, like, I would like to be educated. Anyway, that's an interesting thing that has stuck out to me over the years after several conversations. But back over to you, George.
Yeah, Charles, I have to ask again, going back to your career experience, I love it whenever I get a chance to talk to a practitioner. I always want to talk practitioner questions. What do you say it makes someone a good independent contractor? Like, really, what would you tell our listeners in terms of career advice if they decide, you know, do I go the independent route or not? How do you know that it's the right way for them? Or what would you recommend, at least?
Well, I mean, if you're going to the Big Four, you're traveling a lot. So you have to be open to traveling. But the biggest thing that you have to do is you have to be willing to listen, and you have to understand that you're going to get yelled at a lot, not so much because you did something wrong, but just because the person that's on the other end, you're there to fix problems. And you typically, people that have problems are typically upset about something. So you have to make sure that you check your emotions at the door, and you have to be able to separate yourself from that. And then you have to make sure that you're flexible to travel, because that's another requirement. You know, there's been many times where, you know, I'd get the client yelling at me for one thing or another that had nothing to do with me, but you know, they're venting to the only person that they know, which is you, because you're the face of the company at the time. So you just have to understand that it's not your fault, it's not your problem, it's not something that you did directly, but you're the only face that they know, and you're going to get some of the brunt of that. And as long as you're okay with that, and you don't have, you know, personal emotions into it, you're going to be okay. But those are some things that you're going to definitely have to make sure that you're okay with traveling, and then make sure you can separate yourself and your emotions, because it's going to come at you hard sometimes.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you're there to solve problems, you are walking into problems.
yes, you are. Very much so.
People are already pissed off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure.
Cool. All right. So we talked a little bit about the May event. I know Horizons also has something in October and in June. But I want to give you some final time here to just talk about, like, let's say I am a vendor interested. What can they expect from the Horizon Summit? And then I'll ask a follow-up after that one.
They can expect a cultivated experience with C-suite executives and investors, depending on which conference that they join us in. Mm-hmm. So in New York City or Dallas events, they'll see a lot of our investment groups. Our investment groups typically join a lot of the stuff that we do. They bring their legal counsel. So they bring a lot of the CEOs and CFOs to attend. And then we drive the CIOs and the CISOs for the AI and the cybersecurity part of it. So there's a pretty wide demographic that's there and that attend. So I think that they would be happy to take a look at it. But if they have questions, they're always welcome to reach out and ask.
Okay, great. And then what can practitioners expect of the Horizon Summit, I guess, in terms of the agenda and, you know, what they're getting out of the sessions?
So the practitioners are always welcome to listen to the lawyers. The lawyers are always great at talking about the SEC regulations and all the new and the latest and greatest challenges that we're going to face from a regulatory and compliance standard. And that's why we typically have our lawyers speak at some of those conferences, just because it makes it really easy to come from the horse's mouth, per se, and how to mitigate some of those challenges when you're actually listening to counsel talk about it.
Hey, Charles, thanks for putting the Horizon Conference together. I think a lot of CISO practitioners will really value it. We need to get the word out about it. And, I hope I'm not going to be available for the next one, but I do hope to catch one of the later iterations of it. I do hope to see you there, and I really want to gain the experience, and I want other practitioners to go there as well, because this seems like it's a really worthwhile thing. So thank you for putting it together.
Charles, as you said, your ROI is your time. So thank you for investing your time today with us, and we really appreciate the insight and experience that you have lent to the conversation.
I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
All right. We'll talk soon. That wraps up this episode of Bare Knuckles and Brass Tacks. If you liked this episode, check out our past interview with Yevgeny Karam on how vendors can make the most out of event marketing, including recommendations on who should be staffing a booth. Lastly, if you like the show, please consider leaving a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps others find us. New episodes of Bare Knuckles and Brass Tacks drop every Monday. Listen and subscribe. Stay real. We'll talk to you next week.